The Chasm and the Collision by Robert Alessar. Copyright 2017 by Robert Alessar. All rights reserved. Any reproduction of this copyrighted material by any means without the express written consent of the author is strictly prohibited. For Jacob and Kira, all the way. Chapter 9. The Tree by the Lake. The modest woods Alex had seen were perhaps 100 to 150 yards away, and were larger than they had seemed from a distance. The three made their way toward it without breaking or reducing their pace, which was just short of an all-out sprint, worried as they were about being seen while out in the open. Alex began to feel slightly winded before they were halfway there, though he had thought himself to be in at least decent shape. Nevertheless, he had no intention of slowing, nor did he think Simon or Megan did, until they were under the cover of the trees. As they got closer to their destination, Alex noticed something remarkable. The various plants in the grove were calling out welcome and encouragement to them, not in words, but in sensations and emotions. That encouragement seemed literally to imbue him with increased energy. Instead of slowing down as he drew closer to his goal, Alex found himself speeding up, almost exactly even with him, as though they were all deliberately keeping pace with one another. Simon and Megan also accelerated. Soon they broke the edge of the woods, and moments later brought themselves to what Alex felt was a safe halt. He bent over with his hands braced on his legs while he caught his breath. He could feel himself grinning despite his rapid breathing as he surveyed the life around him. The perimeter of the wood was buffered by an irregular halo of grass, some of it almost waist high, though much of it was quite a bit shorter. The grass gave way quickly to bushes and shrubs, then to small trees, then to much larger full-sized trees. It was among the latter that the three had stopped running. None of the plants looked familiar to Alex, but they all seemed healthy, vibrant, and beautiful, even with their slightly bluish greenery. Much more noteworthy than the atypical color, though, was the chorus of greetings from all around. There was no sound to it. The only actual noises were those made by the slight movement of a breeze through the leaves, and the occasional rustlings and vocalizations of whatever small creatures lived among the plants. Yet in his head, Alex could hear a round of enthusiastic welcome and praise, as though he, Simon, and Megan were soldiers who had just returned home after completing some dangerous and heroic mission. He stood upright, grinning even more broadly, and said out loud, "Hi there!" In response, he felt a much clearer and more formal, "Hello!" from almost all the plants at once. Laughing mildly, Alex looked at Simon and Megan. They were both obviously still catching their breath, but the looks on their faces were priceless. Megan's expression was one of delighted wonder and curiosity as she turned in place, forcing air into and out of her lungs while taking in the spectacle, both visual and mental, of life around her. Simon looked more stunned than delighted, and he seemed unconscious of the fact that his mouth hung open and his eyes were so wide that they looked as though they might fall out of his head. It was fortunate for him that there were few airborne insects, because if there had been more, he would have been in danger of having one or more fly down his throat. Alex laughed more strongly with that thought, and Simon turned to look at him. "Holy crap," Simon said. "It's true. The plants can think. And they can talk." "Yep," Alex agreed, still grinning. He felt overjoyed and exhilarated, despite the fact that he, Simon, and Megan were apparently in another universe, and they weren't yet sure how they were going to get home. He simply felt too alive and energized to worry about anything for the moment. "It's wonderful," Megan exclaimed, also smiling broadly. "They're all so beautiful and wonderful." "Thank you, child of Winestrith," came a non-voice that arose from deeper in the woods. It didn't truly use the word Winestrith, however. Instead, it projected a distinct mental impression, now familiar to Alex, which he recognized as belonging to the tree that had spoken to him the previous night. Simon furrowed his brow. "Child of what?" he asked aloud. "Child of Winestrith," Alex told him. "It's that tree in the center of the garden. You know, the one with the berries." He said this last word very quietly, not wanting to think too deeply about the implications of the fact that he, Simon, and Megan had eaten what might be the only hope to save everything in their universe and this one. Apparently the new voice was aware of Alex's distress, as well as its cause, because it said, "Do not be distressed, child of Winestrith. You have not doomed the universes, but have made it possible that they might still be saved." "Really?" Simon suddenly yelled, evidently forgetting his incredulity over being spoken to by vegetation. "Are you sure?" Alex could swear that he sensed something reminiscent of kindly laughter before the non-voice replied, "Yes, I am entirely sure." "Oh, thank God," Megan whispered, closing her eyes. Simon's face bore obvious signs of at least partial relief, and he gazed back and forth at the woods all around before asking, "Where are you?" "I am this way," the non-voice replied. They all received an impression that they should head along a new course, slightly to the left of the trajectory they had followed when entering the forest. As one, they all started moving again. They went more slowly now, since they had not yet completely caught their breath, and, being under the cover of foliage, did not have to fear immediate pursuit. Soon they penetrated a thick growth of tall, straight-trunked hardwoods and came to the shore of a massive pond, or perhaps a modest lake. It was surrounded by a population of very old trees, the tallest of which was close at hand, near a small peninsula that jutted several yards into the water. In a few places along the shoreline, reeds and grasses grew, but trees dominated the scene otherwise. Alex noted briefly, not giving the matter much thought, that the area, indeed the whole woods, seemed almost completely devoid of leafy debris, despite the large number of plants. "You have found me," the voice said. Alex could tell that it was coming from the massive, many-branched tree directly before them at the base of the peninsula. From the direction of Simon's and Megan's gazes, it was clear that they could tell also. They all stared at the beautiful, majestic plant. The tree's top branches and leaves reached easily over 100 feet above the ground, and its limbs spread to perhaps a third of that near the base. Its leaves were on long, thin, terminal branches, and they themselves were also long and thin, and a brighter green than many of the others in the forest, though they were also tinted slightly blue. Alex received a powerful impression of great age from the non-voice, and even more strongly from the aura that radiated from the tree. He found himself walking toward it even after Megan and Simon had drawn to a halt, gazing with looks of reverence. Alex drew closer, and when he was barely a few feet away, he reached out his hands. Then he hesitated. He wondered if, perhaps, he was being impertinent or presumptuous to want to touch it. He received a mental reassurance that he was being nothing of the kind. Thus assured, he gently placed his palms and fingers on the surface of the tree trunk. Its bark was smoother than that of the maple tree in front of his house, and it had a grayish tinge, not quite as pale as a typical birch tree. The pattern on the bark was of light, crisscrossing interdigitated vertical tracks, raised slightly but smoothly from a darker base. The trunk of the tree was thicker around than he, Megan, and Simon could easily have encircled together with outstretched arms. Its first branches, which were just above Alex's head, were almost as thick as the main trunks of many of the trees on his street. Yet the physical impression of the great tree faded into the background and soon disappeared almost completely from Alex's awareness as he became immersed in its deeper identity. Its life and mind were older than Alex could easily grasp. He had learned in school, as well as through his own reading, about the timescales necessary to describe the age of the Earth and the universe, but these were merely intellectual concepts, symbols written down on paper. When Alex looked at the number 4 billion years printed on a page, it didn't hit him. It didn't convey viscerally how big a number it was. The age of the tree he touched was not even close to the same scale as that of the Earth. Its lifespan was tiny, even negligible by comparison. But its age was the age of memory, a conscious antiquity that stretched back in time to well before the creation of the chasm that Freeman had described. It had sensed, had experienced, had known, a life of such duration that the human brain was not designed to encompass it. Yet thankfully this fact did not overwhelm or shock Alex, but simply filled him with amazement, a sense of wonder and grandeur beyond anything he had imagined before. He felt the life of the woods around him, spreading outward and backward in time, expanding in area as it did, and he knew that, before the chasm, there had been no desert in this region. It had been a vast tract of woodland, populated by many animals, some with almost fully conscious minds, but most much more rudimentary, coming and going, living their short but healthy lives, while the plants fed and protected them, whether the animals knew it or not. He felt the tree's contact and interaction with the other plant minds, the powerful thoughts of the many other trees, the simpler but intelligent bushes, and the childlike communal minds of the grass. They all interconnected and overlapped, dancing amongst one another, communing and communicating over a course of time Alex had never considered before. He would have loved to continue exploring the mind and memories, as well as the physical living presence, of the great tree, but all at once something distracted him. From a great distance he seemed to hear a voice, a real, physical, ordinary voice, calling his name. "Alex?" it repeated. Who was that? Did he even know that voice? "Alex!" It was louder this time, almost desperate and full of worry, yet it didn't quite fully penetrate his consciousness. "You should answer, child of Wynestrith," the voice of the tree said, more quietly than it had spoken before, more personally, a thought directed at Alex alone. "The other children are frightened." With those words came a polite but firm encouragement for Alex to take a step away from the tree. It was not a command. It felt nothing at all like what Megan had done to the men and dinosaur dogs. Yet Alex didn't for an instant consider refusing. To do such a thing would have felt incredibly impolite and disrespectful. Stepping back and taking his hands away from the trunk of the tree, Alex suddenly became aware again of the woods, the lake, and everything else around him. Only when that awareness returned did he realize that he had ever lost it, and had become almost completely insensitive to the world outside the mind of the tree. "Alex!" Turning, Alex saw Simon and Megan standing near him, their faces drawn with concern. It had been Simon's voice that had spoken to him just seconds ago. "What's up?" Alex asked. Simon's eyebrows raised precipitously, and he seemed almost offended by the audacity of Alex's question. "What's up?" he asked. "Yeah," Alex responded, deeply confused. "What's up?" Simon seemed too exasperated to speak, but Megan said, "Alex, you were just standing there, touching that tree, not even moving at all, for like 5 minutes or something." "Huh?" Alex grunted in disbelief. Could it really have been that long? But then again, now that he thought of it, it was hard to believe that it had been such a short time. He was having trouble adjusting back down to his own young human point of view now that he had released his contact with the huge ancient tree. "Yeah!" Simon yelled, clearly both angry and frightened. "We've been trying to get you to answer us, but you didn't say anything." "Really?" Alex said, still muddled and distant. "Yes!" Simon replied, his face full of high color, a fact which Alex thought was at least better than the unhealthy pallor he so often displayed. "My apologies," the mind voice of the tree said to them all. "I had not realized that this one is a gardener." When the tree said, "this one," the three all received a clear mental impression of Alex. It was a curious experience for him, being given a direct thought reference to himself from another mind's point of view. However, he had little attention to spare for that, focused instead on the last concept conveyed, which had been a truly verbal one, like the time when Wynestrith had told him Petrie's name. This tree, though, seemed somehow much more comfortable with the process than Wynestrith had been. What was more, it had used an actual English word, though Alex had to assume that it had first learned the idea from the people of its own world. No, not me," he politely corrected the tree. "I've never kept a garden or anything like it. I mean, apart from trying to get beans to sprout back in a grade school project. My mom has a garden." The tree chuckled in their heads and said, "No, I am referring to the term, or its equivalent, as it is used here on Osmir." Again, the word Osmir was an explicit verbal thought. "Those walkers who are gifted with a powerful, natural ability to communicate with and understand plants are called gardeners." When the tree used the term walkers, Alex thought that it referred to all animals, as in contrast to plants, which of course were immobile. "Oh," he said, "well, I think that's just something that happened because we ate the berries, right, Simon?" Simon, though still plainly upset with him, looked as though he was about to answer, but the tree spoke first. "I don't believe so," it said. "You are all, of course, the children of Wynestrith, so you can hear and understand us and are able to be here in this world. There are also other important natures which that fruit has conferred upon you, but to be a gardener is an inborn ability. I did not know they could exist in your world, though perhaps Winestrith knew. Alex was far from sure he understood the tree's meaning, though he didn't have even the slightest lingering disbelief that it was speaking to them. This also seemed to be the case for his friends, at least for the time being, because Megan now spoke directly to the tree. "Why are you calling us children of Winestrith?" she asked, flawlessly substituting the word Winestrith for the thought impression that the tree had conveyed. "Because you are Winestrith's children," came the reply. For an instant, Alex thought the tree was going to leave its answer in that singularly unenlightening state, but after a brief pause it continued, "You have eaten the fruit of Winestrith, and that fruit has merged with your being, as it was grown to do. You are not simply walkers anymore. You are, in a way, already plants yourselves, and you are becoming more so." Simon looked frankly alarmed, and he said, "What do you mean? Are we going to, like, start turning green and growing leaves or something?" To his surprise, Alex felt the tree break into startled laughter, and the other nearby trees took up the mental sound in a merry chorus. The laughter was not derisive, but simply a joyful response to the silly image Simon had conjured in their minds. Alex could almost see it himself. Simon with green skin, with twigs and leaf-speckled branches growing from his hair, and with long, root-like feet. "No," the tree said as the laughter subsided. "That will not happen. Unless perhaps you choose to make it happen." Megan smiled, looking at Simon with amused affection. Alex suspected that she too had seen the plant Simon image the trees had imagined. He was a tiny bit envious of the way she looked at his best friend, but he was too elevated by his recent communion with the tree for that emotion to take serious hold. He listened with an almost beatific attitude as Megan asked, "So what does it mean that we're part walkers and part plants?" She didn't seem at all alarmed by the idea. As for Alex, after having sunk himself briefly into the life and mind of the tree, he thought he wouldn't mind being all plant. "Some of it is probably already clear to you," the tree said. "Your minds are able freely to touch ours, and to touch and understand the minds of other walkers as plants can. That is why you can speak to and understand the people of Osmir, though their language is not of your universe. Also, it is the reason for the abilities you used to escape recently from the human who meant to kill you, and from the structure to which you have been brought." Alex's equanimity took a sudden and powerful blow when he was forced to think of how he'd shattered Inslick's mind, his conscience giving him great pain despite the absolute necessity of his actions. He found himself wondering, to his horror, what Inslick might have been like after the attack had he not accidentally killed himself. Megan and Simon looked at him with sympathy and concern. He wondered if they could tell what he was thinking. "Yes," the tree said, either in response to Alex's mental question or to his previous thoughts. "We know what happened to the walker who tried to kill you. We felt the force of your blow even here. Indeed, it was likely felt by plant minds as well as some gardeners across much of Osmir within the chasm. The human's mind was wiped away. All that he had ever experienced, ever known, or had ever been, all ceased to exist." Alex lowered his head. He felt tears first threatening, then gathering in his eyes. Finally, they spilled out and began to run down his face. He had killed a man. In a way, he had done worse than kill him. He didn't know how he was going to come to terms with that fact. It drove the sense of peace and calm, which had just instants before been pervasive and wonderful, from him completely. The tree spoke again. "Your nature as both gardener and child of Winestrith gives you tremendous power, and it can be dangerous. But console yourself that what you did was not deliberate, and was done to save yourself and your friends, and to save countless other beings as well." "Yeah," Simon said, and patted Alex on the shoulder, something Alex didn't think he'd ever done before. "You saved our lives, even when I couldn't just shoot the guy, which is what I should have done. I mean, that dude was frickin' crazy." "No," the tree said, suddenly and fervently. "He was not insane. He was a believer, and he was not alone." "What do you mean?" Simon asked. "There are others like him," the tree replied. "Many others. They are among the chief reasons Winestrith sent Petrie away and had her bring the fruit to your world. There are many such walkers, and they are being led to try to make certain that the collision takes place."
"But why?" Megan asked. "I mean, it's just totally crazy. Do they really believe all that stuff he said?" Most do, the tree told her. And the one you met was not the only one of his kind among the people who abducted you. They believe that they are doing good and right by trying to bring about the collision, and they will not hesitate to do whatever they feel they must. Crap, Simon said quietly. He sounded not so much surprised as depressed by the tree's information. Indeed, the tree responded, and Alex thought he detected a bit of sardonic humor in its tone. But there is something even more sinister in this than is apparent. Alex, drying his eyes, asked, What do you mean? The tree seemed to hesitate. Alex felt it communing more directly with the other plant minds in the woods, which had deferred conversation to their elder companion, as if trying to gather their collective thoughts and impressions to clarify their ideas. When it finally spoke again, its voice was shadowed with disquiet and concern. These walkers, it said, are not coming to their beliefs naturally. They are being deceived, influenced by another mind. What do you mean? Megan asked, repeating Alex's question. There is a being, the tree replied, somewhere near Osmere, within or beyond the chasm itself. It is a mind something like a plant and something like a walker, rather as the three of you are, but also something unlike either. It is a mind of terrible appetite, a predator that can never be satiated. It wishes only to raven and devour, and its hunger is such that it wants all other beings and things to wither, to dry, to be bereft of light, and to starve. It hungers for these universes, for yours and ours. As the tree spoke, Alex received from it and the other plants the impression of a horrible will, like a vast, black, acidic cloud, hiding behind the minds of people like Inslick. He didn't know whether this impression was literal, born of actual contact by the plant minds, or was only a stand-in concept. Either way, he could tell that he perceived only a pale shadow of the dreadful truth. He didn't think he wanted to learn any more about it. Nevertheless, the tree went on. It wishes for the collision to occur. But there is more danger in that wish even than the destruction of all that exists in two universes. Huh? Simon said. How could anything be more dangerous than that? We do not know, the tree replied. This mind, it hides. It deceives. It works through the thoughts of others and can conceal itself even from the minds of most plants. Even Winestrith cannot penetrate it. Though it was through Winestrith that we came finally to recognize its existence and the true danger. Yet I, whose memory goes back to a time well before the chasm, to when the sun rose and set and the stars could be seen, recall a growing disquiet in the minds of the world. I remember a sense that something, some threat, was present that had not been there before. A darkness, a parasite, a disease. Even as it spoke, the tree conveyed thoughts beyond mere verbal concepts. Alex saw images, as if in his own memories, of the world of Osmere before the chasm. He saw the sunny, blue sky with normal day and night cycles. He saw again the region in which he now stood when it had been a broad, wooded landscape stretching for many miles in all directions. He felt healthy, harmonious life spread across the planet-wide ecosystem. He also saw and felt the minds of humans and of other thinking creatures that existed in that world, their lives only rarely troubled by war or other significant violence, marked by carefully controlled use and sharing of resources. He saw the cities that the thinking walkers built, constructed mainly out of stone, which was shaped and molded to their needs. He saw vast farms peopled by plants which were not killed with the harvest, but were partners in mutual support of the walkers, yielding seed and leaf and fruit as needed in return for care and nurturing. It was not perfect. There was conflict and crime and the need for compromise. But because each thinking being knew that the others also had minds, including the plants, some of which lived for centuries, most were well practiced in looking beyond their own short-term interests, recognizing the tremendous benefits of cooperation. The plants, with the aid of the gardeners, helped to settle many disagreements, and often literally arranged for a meeting of minds among the thinking walkers. In the midst of this relative health and harmony, a strange disquiet took root and began to grow. Many plants felt the growing suspicion that something, somewhere, was wrong. It was not a clear thought. It was vague, haunting, and all the more fearsome for its lack of clarity and substance. It reminded Alex of the way he had sometimes felt at night when he was younger and his closet door had accidentally been left slightly ajar. The thought that there was something awful lurking there in that darkness, watching him while he lay in bed, waiting for him to be at his most vulnerable before it crept out and struck. Or perhaps it was more like those times, some of them recent, when he was at home alone after school, before his mother got off work, when the silence of the house suddenly seemed too silent, when it seemed that, although the sky outside was sunny, there was a sudden, shadowy cloud that lay on his house alone, when he felt certain that someone, something, was in the house with him, that it was slowly approaching him from behind, on feet so quiet that they sucked in and devoured all noise from the outside world, approaching and preparing to do something to him that was perhaps worse than murder. It was that sort of dull, nameless, chilling dread that began to grow in the worldwide minds of the plants, and of those who could best commune with them. Then it began to be felt even by some of the more ordinary walkers. Something was approaching, something horrible beyond ready imagination. It was the foreboding of deliberate catastrophe, like an earthquake or hurricane that happened not merely because of the progression of immense natural forces, but because the disasters themselves wished to occur, as though they had an ill will, a hatred, and ached to lash out at the tiny creatures that dared to live lives of peace and joy. The fear had seemed irrational, but it nevertheless grew and spread. There was no clear cause or source, so the real feeling could not be addressed. Sometimes that fear, no longer containable, escaped through other outlets, leading to baseless conflict and violence. Alex shuddered at the memories that seeped through him, and when he looked at Simon and Megan, he could tell that they too experienced the sense of lurking horror which the thoughts of the tree conveyed. "Ugh," Megan muttered. "Yeah," Simon said, "tell me about it." Alex had no adequate words to say or sounds to make. "Indeed," the tree said in their minds. Yet we could not place any source for our misgivings, and most of us, plant and walker alike, dismissed them, strange and disturbing though they were. "But what did it?" Simon asked. "We did not know," the tree replied, "and we still do not truly understand. Of course, once the walker named Baitrill discovered the impending threat of the collision of universes and worked to create his chasm, many believed that threat must be the cause. We plants have awareness of aspects of reality that walkers do not. Perhaps we had sensed the threatening approach of your cosmos, not knowing what it was, and that danger created our fear, which spread from plant to walker, from mind to mind." Simon looked thoughtful. "I guess that makes sense," he said. "I mean, I don't know if it's true that you guys can, like, feel things that people can't." He trailed off. Megan spoke up then, breaking a brief, pensive silence. "But you don't think that's it, do you?" she asked. "You don't think it was just the collision that was making everybody feel afraid?" "No," the tree agreed. "You think," she went on, "that it's the same thing that's making people like that guy in the place back there try to make the collision happen, don't you?" "Yes," the tree replied. "I do believe that. The sense is the same, and I am not the only mind to believe so. Winestrith agrees." Alex asked, "How do you know what Winestrith thinks? I mean, can you, like, talk to it even way out here?" He had no idea where out here was, but he suspected that it was quite some distance from the garden in which Winestrith grew. "Plants can communicate with each other more easily than walkers can," came the reply. "Indeed, Winestrith could send its thoughts even here, and has done so at times, for the roots and branches of its mind spread through the entire structure and barrier of the chasm. But the other mind, the entity which we fear, the thing of malice and hunger, has an awareness as great as any of ours. So we must be subtle and cautious, and we are reduced to sending thoughts from plant to nearby plant as carefully and quietly as possible. Thus, I do not know yet what Winestrith would have us do to help you. It's..." There was an abrupt distraction in the tree's thoughts. Alex sensed that some urgent information was now reaching the small wooded area. "What is it?" he asked. "What's going on?" The walkers at the building from which you fled have returned, and they have found the injured man and the dead man, and they have discovered that you three are gone.
Oh, crap, Simon spat. We gotta find that shunt thing as soon as we can and get out of here.
No, the tree replied. You will not be able to use that shunt. It is both covered and guarded, and it is near the building. Megan's ability is strong, but the walkers have realized that they were fooled before, and will be alert for any subsequent unusual urges. You will not readily be able to drive them away again.
When the tree referred to Megan, Alex did not actually hear her name in his head, but rather he received the tree's mental impression of her, as he had felt its impression of him. It was again a remarkable experience, for in the tree's thought he saw Megan not as she looked physically, but the shape of her mind as it impressed itself upon the minds of the plants. The effect was strange and beautiful, but Alex almost felt it inappropriate for him to experience it, as though he were invading Megan's privacy. Megan herself, meanwhile, seemed to recall, and to be distracted by, her previous urgent concerns, which the remarkable meeting with the tree apparently had driven from her mind temporarily.
But, she began, what are we going to do? We've got to get back. My mom's going to be so freaked out. If we can't get to that space warp thing...
Well, Alex offered, maybe we can get to the one Petri used. No one else knew about that one, and it goes right into my house. He turned back to the tree and asked, does Petri know we're here?
By now, yes, the tree replied. As you requested when you awakened, we relayed quietly to her the thought that you had been brought here. I believe she already suspected that you would be coming. We have been aware for several days that the walkers on Osmir intended to seek you out, once they realized that you could see them when they were in your world.
Well, Alex said, how far is it to that clearing where Petri was when I talked to her?
The tree paused for a moment before answering, it is quite a few of your miles. I have difficulties with specific distances, not being a walker, and the people of Osmir do not use the same measures you use, so I cannot clearly translate the distance for you. But it is a goodly way away. I do not think you could walk it in a day, even if no one were following you.
And someone will be following us, Simon said, his voice both bitter and fearful.
A day? Megan cried in dismay. But they're going to have to sedate my mom. I can't be gone for a day.
She turned to Simon and asked, what time is it now, Simon?
Simon jumped in surprise at her question, and Alex realized that he had completely forgotten that he was wearing a watch. With a look of embarrassment, Simon pulled back the sleeve of his jacket and glanced at the Timex Iron Man he wore.
Holy crap, he exclaimed. It's almost 10 o'clock.
Oh no, Megan wailed, obviously near tears, a shining film appearing over the surface of her eyes.
They've already called our houses by now.
Maybe not, Alex said quickly. I didn't really get the chance to explain it to you guys, but time is kind of different here.
Megan glanced at him, clearly not processing his words.
Simon, on the other hand, said, you said something like that to those guys back there in the building, but what do you mean?
Well, when we heard my mom coming from upstairs last night, Petri took me through that shunt to the place where she was hiding, and we were there for a little while. I mean, we were talking for maybe, I don't know, 10 minutes or so? But when we heard that flying manta ray thing and I came back through, it was like my mom had only just gotten downstairs or something. She didn't even know I'd been gone.
Both Simon and Megan stared at Alex with bemused expressions. Alex half expected Simon to begin grilling him about how such a thing could even be possible, but it seemed that he was having too much trouble even trying to absorb what had been said. Megan, too, looked more confused than skeptical. Alex was surprised by their reactions. After all that they had seen and gone through, especially since that morning, he personally thought that the time difference was relatively easy to grasp. Then again, he had experienced its effect directly, while Simon and Megan had not. Apparently sensing the group's confusion, the tree addressed them again.
He speaks truly, it said. Within the barrier of the chasm, time passes differently than it does in your universe, or we believe in Osmir's normal universe. I do not know whether this was done deliberately by Betro when the chasm was made, so that he would have more time to work on his longer solution, or if it was merely a side effect of the chasm's nature. But it was soon discovered by those who explored the shunts and went to your world that for every interval of time spent there, nearly 30 would pass on Osmir within the chasm.
Alex was rather surprised that neither Simon nor Megan seemed skeptical about the tree's explanation. He was half inclined to be both amused and offended that they trusted the tree so much more than they trusted him, but he realized immediately why it was so. The tree communicated by sharing its thoughts. They did not merely receive its words, they received the concepts, as well as clear knowledge of the intentions and truthfulness of the mind behind them. They could, quite literally, feel the tree's honesty. Alex had a moment to muse on how wonderful it would be if the schools on Earth had teachers who could teach that way. Then Simon said, "So you're saying that if we've been here for a little over 2 hours, and it's only been, what, like 5 minutes or so at home?"
"I do not know well your units of time measurement," the tree replied, "but if your figuring is correct, then so is your conclusion."
"I'm sure his figuring is correct," Alex said. "His figuring usually is." Megan breathed a small sigh. "Okay, well, that's kind of a relief," she said. "You got that right," Simon agreed. "But we still got to figure out how to get to that other shunt thing, or whatever you call it. Unless there's other ones that are closer."
"There are other shunts, but they are farther away and as well protected as this one is," the tree informed them.
"Crap," Simon again interjected, more quietly this time. "How are we going to do this? We can't just hide here, that's for sure. It's not like it's going to be hard for those people to figure out where we went. It's the only hiding place anywhere around here." Simon was right, and it filled Alex with a peculiar sense of guilt. They had followed his lead when they headed for the woods, since it seemed to be the only real cover for miles around, and he still thought it had been the only feasible choice. Unfortunately, the fact that it really was the only choice also made it the obvious place for pursuers to seek them. Megan, looking off roughly in the direction from which they had come, appeared to draw the same conclusion. She seemed almost to be trying to catch sight of anyone who might be following them, but even though the woods in which they stood were not terribly large, the trees were more than dense enough to prevent her from seeing more than a few dozen yards.
"You need not fear any pursuit just yet," the tree said. "We plants can discourage the minds of the humans and Tixans from considering seeking you here, or even seeing you here, at least if they happen to glance at you wandering near the edge of our gathering."
"Really?" Alex asked. "That's kind of cool." He recalled what Petrie had said about the trees and plants around her clearing being able to hide her from the flying manta ray and from any other pursuit. He was happy to learn that she had been telling the truth, not just giving him false assurances so that he would leave her and save himself.
Is that a little like what I did to them?" Megan asked.
"Yes," the tree replied. "It is very similar. But there are many of our minds, so our efforts are more effective than yours would be. Also, our messages are subtler, simply suggestions, not to notice, not to consider."
After a moment's pause, it went on,
"We also have had more practice than you at interacting with the minds of walkers. I suspect that it will not be long before you excel any of us at this particular ability."
"I don't think I really want to," Megan said, looking troubled. "Still, it's good news at least," Alex pointed out, hoping to cheer her up. "We don't have to just run away without a plan or anything."
"That's true," Simon admitted, "but we still have to get out of here. I don't know how we're going to get there, but if it takes a day to get to that shunt thing, then it's still going to be, like, almost an hour at home. I guess we're going to have to come up with some excuse for being an hour late for school, but, well, we've got to get there first, and this whole place looks like most of it's a big desert."
"It is true that much of the land in this region is barren," the tree confirmed sadly. "It was not so in the past, but the chasm cut this section of Osmir off from the tilt and the turning of the world, from the rising and the setting of the sun that drove the normal cycles of nature, including the normal rainfall."
Experiencing the mental impact of the tremendous loss of plant and animal life that had occurred after the chasm was made, Alex asked, "So, like, the sky always looks like it does now? There's no nighttime?"
"Correct."
"What are we going to do?" Simon asked, sounding desperate and discouraged. "We've got to figure out a way to get to that space warp to Alex's house and to do it without getting caught or dying of thirst."
"There are those who may be able to help you," the tree said. "I have called out to them, and one will be coming soon."
"Petrie?" Alex asked, strangely eager to see the hunted, disheveled girl again.
"No," the tree replied. "Petrie is too far away. She is trying to make her way to you, perhaps to meet you halfway, and we will keep her apprised of the situation as best we can, for she knows Winestrith's mind better than most, and she may have some idea what Winestrith intended you to do. but she will not be able to meet you here.
Aw, Alex mumbled. He had wanted Simon and Megan to meet her. He had also wanted to confirm, with his own eyes, that she was all right.
So who is coming? Simon asked.
You will meet him soon, the tree replied. I have not actually ever heard him think his name. He has left his residence already and is within our reach to sense him, but we do not like to pry uninvited into others' minds if we can avoid it.
Simon blinked a few times, apparently digesting the concept of someone thinking their own name, and the fact that the tree couldn't know what a name was unless it had heard it thought, at least not without having to pry into someone's mind. Alex, however, was more intrigued by something else.
Hey, he said, you called Petrie she, and the new guy he.
Simon and Megan both looked confused, but the tree just radiated warm amusement and said,
yes, I did.
Realizing how perplexing his comment must seem to his two friends, Alex said, when Winestrith told me to go and talk to Petrie, it kept saying he and him, even though Petrie's a girl. When I asked her about it, Petrie said that since there aren't really boy and girl plants, a lot of them don't get the whole he and she thing down and just think of everyone as either all he's or all she's. Simon appeared mildly bemused, but Megan asked, so how come you can do it?
I am very old, the tree replied without a trace of self-consciousness. I have been interacting with walkers for well over 1,000 years. In that time, I have come to realize that differences which matter little to plants can nevertheless be important to the walkers with whom we interact, so I do my best to be polite and think of your genders when speaking with you. It is like the idea of names which are so important to you humans as well.
What, Simon said, don't plants have names?
Not as such, the tree replied, seemingly unperturbed that Simon had cut it off. When we communicate, we give a mental touch to other minds that is more distinctive than any name could be. Thus, we do not have need of names.
Well, wait, Alex said. What about Winestrith? It has a name.
That is not how it thinks of itself, the tree said. Rather, it is a fanciful name given to it by walkers. It is named after a figure of myth of an ancient human people, who believed that the cosmos itself was held aloft by the trunk and branches of a great divine tree called Winestrith.
Huh, Simon said, that's kind of neat. Sort of like a plant version of Atlas or something.
Alex, recognizing Simon's reference from school reading on mythology as well as from the God of War video games he had borrowed from his cousin, chuckled quietly. He thought he saw Megan, despite her anxiety, also give a slight smile.
I suppose so, the tree said.
Alex wondered if it could tell from Simon's thoughts exactly what he meant when he referred to Atlas, or whether it was just being polite. The three students and the trees around them stood silent for a bit, listening to the quiet sound of the constant breeze. It was not as though they didn't have any more questions. Alex thought he could have come up with 100 more, and he was sure Megan felt the same. As for Simon, he could probably think of 1,000 points of inquiry. However, they had all taken in such a huge amount of information in such a short time, and their situation was so utterly unexpected, its implications so vast and staggering, that Alex, at least, felt numb. He didn't want to contemplate the fact that the concerns facing him, Simon, and Megan were far larger than simply finding Petrie's shunt and returning home, but he couldn't help himself. They had eaten Winestrith's fruit, which had been grown to stop the collision of universes from happening somehow. He couldn't even imagine how such a thing might work, but it meant that they were all three quite firmly tied up in this business for the duration. If there had been a shunt before them at that moment, one that would allow them to go directly back home at will, it would surely not be the end of their concerns. Somehow they had to figure out what Winestrith intended. If only he could talk to it again, as he had in his dream. He didn't know why it had been able to communicate with him directly back then without the other mind knowing, but wasn't able to do so now. Perhaps the other had known that their conversation had taken place, or perhaps since Alex had been half asleep and on Earth, it hadn't. He wished he understood everything just a little bit better. One thing he didn't think he could ever understand, not in the farthest reaches of his imagination, was why anyone, or anything for that matter, would want the universes to collide. That wouldn't mean just killing everyone on Earth and everyone on Osmir. It would mean wiping out everything that might exist in 2 universes. How could anyone want to do that? Why would they want to do it? Alex was so overcome by what he had done to Inslik without even meaning to that he tried not to let himself think about it.
How could anyone want to kill billions of people, and more than billions? How could it even be possible? And how could Winestrith stop it? How could a small tree, sitting in a garden somewhere here on Osmir, prevent a catastrophe of such magnitude? And what part would he, Simon, and Megan play in that process? Alex's reverie was interrupted when Simon asked the tree, how long is it going to be before the new guy gets here?
I cannot say precisely, or in terms that are common to your use, it replied, but it will probably be slightly longer than the time that has passed since you fled the building.
Okay, Simon muttered, looking uncomfortable. What is it? Megan asked, clearly recognizing, as had Alex, that something was troubling Simon.
Well, he stammered, I have to go to the bathroom.
Alex bit his tongue to keep from laughing, but Megan let out a small chuckle. Simon, despite a deep blush, returned an embarrassed smile.